I did promise you a chat about Sports Personality of the Year. It's 70 years old. Shortlist this time around, Jude Bellingham, Keely Hodgkinson, Luke Littler, Joe Root, Sarah Story and Alex Yee. I've been speaking to Peter Donaldson, who's written a book, and the winner is Chronicling 70 Years of the Trophy. And I began by asking him why Sports Personality of the Year has endured for so long.
I think because people just love the idea of comparing things which really aren't comparable, honestly. I think, Brendan Foster said when he won, how can he be compared to John Conte, the boxer? And I think just that ludicrousness of the whole exercise is what people really enjoy.
Yeah, it is. I suppose some people would say it's sport panto, really, wouldn't they? But we'll get into that in a second. I want us to get into the groove, Peter. You probably know this back to front, but let's just remind everyone of the Sports Personality of the Year theme tune. Dickie Bowes on, everyone. Here we go.
Now the big moment has arrived.
Being here tonight is very special.
I'm very proud to have won this award.
This is just unbelievable.
I'm actually shaking.
Thank you so much.
It's like a cross between the 633 Squadron and the Dam Busters, Peter, don't you think? It's a perfect mashup.
Yeah, and it's got the same nostalgic sort of impact, hasn't it?
Yeah, and some would say self-importance as well. It's kind of, look at this programme, it's special.
I think it is sort of telling us that, isn't it? Yeah.
Jude, let's look at its history then and what it means to us as a nation, because there's no getting away from it. A lot of people enjoy it, a lot of people vote in it, but it started off as kind of a slot filler, didn't it? Just give us a potted history of Sports Personality of the Year.
Well, that's right. I mean, originally, so it started in 1954, and originally it was just a sort of adjunct to what was a much bigger award, which was the Sporting Records, which was a newspaper of the 1950s, and they had a man and woman of the year, and the BBC, one of the BBC directors at the time, thought they would just add in their own BBC Sports Personality. So it started off as a very small affair, honestly, you know, compared to what it's grown into now.
Yeah, well, it's a big bells and whistles thing now. What about the importance that's placed on it? For the BBC, particularly as the years have gone by and their rights have diminished, it's a great chance to get all the big names there, isn't it? But I mean, you know, Lewis Hamilton turns up, but we've not seen a wheel move on the BBC for 20 years, have we? So how important do sports stars see it, do you think, Peter?
I think sports stars, I mean, I know that the BBC is clearly, you know, the problem is it's lost its rights to a lot of the sports, and so we don't see some of the major football tournaments and the F1 and some of the major other sporting events don't appear. But I think for the sportsmen and women themselves, I think it's still seen as the most prestigious award, honestly, because I think it's the one that they know in the tens of thousands, the British public vote for it.
And just on that rights thing, because you address some of this in the book. Give me the stats. I don't know, I'm paraphrasing you now, but have more ice skaters won than rugby players because there's more ice skating on the beeb than rugby?
Ah, right, yeah, no, so you're right. More ice skaters have won than rugby players. More royals have won than rugby players, even more, an incredible statistic. And I think partly you're right, because when the ice skaters won, it was the 1970s and 80s, and the BBC had big coverage of the Winter Olympics. But you know, some sports that actually don't get much coverage occasionally do win. For example, Princess Anne and Zara Phillips with the eventing. It was hardly covered on the BBC, but they managed to win it. So, but I think partly you're right. I mean, it is coverage in the early days particularly. So a lot of athletes, a lot of swimmers were winning in the early days because that's the main coverage that the BBC had.
Yeah. And before we get into specifics and the names of those who've won and their achievements, let's just ask the burning question of all, do you have to have a personality to win it? Because on some occasions, Peter, it would appear not.
It does, and poor, I mean, without naming any names, but, you know, some sports stars seem to get more stick than others for the personality element. I think my view is there was a great, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said that, and I will name someone, Nigel Mansell, and they said, actually, all the personality you need is to be able to control an F1 car at 200 miles an hour when the wheel blows. That's personality. Yeah. What else do you want?
Yeah, and that's it. They're not going to get up and do 20-minute stand-up, are they? But they, what they have done, I guess, is break through the nation's consciousness that year. Is that what seems to lead to the most votes, do you think, that somehow they've made more newspaper inches than others?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, usually it's a moment rather than the whole year's career's worth. So what's happened is usually at one particular moment, they've somehow captured the public's imagination, whether it's winning a gold medal in the Olympics or, I mean, for footballers, it's much harder. But because they've scored a spectacular goal, or in Paul Gascoigne's case, because of the tears in Italia 90, they've just drawn the nation together in that one sort of special moment.
Yeah, well, interestingly, actually, that if you're in a team game, that's interesting. There's Gascoigne broke through because of the tears and everything that came with it. Mary Earps won last year, didn't she? Yeah. She was singled out, and a penny for the thoughts of her teammates. But you ask yourself, why? I wonder. I mean, that's a, you know, I'm not demeaning Mary Earps. She deserved to win it, but why was she singled out? Do we think?
I suppose. The penalty save, maybe, do you think? That was the sort of moment that maybe people remembered in what was a very close match, wasn't it, in that final? So I guess, I mean, it is interesting why one person in a team. I mean, if we look at the footballers that won, usually, there's one exception, but usually it's because they've scored a spectacular free kick, or there's just some moment which, for the whole team, seems to be encapsulated in their one action. But it's really hard, I think, for team players to win Sports Personality of the Year.
Yeah, and just on that, footballers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, from my calculation, from your book, have won it. You would think that, you know, anecdotally, being the most popular sport in this country, that every year a footballer would run roughshod over everybody else, but that is certainly not the case.
No, and it is. I think it is because, I mean, not only have you got to do the one spectacular moment, but your team has also probably got to win a World Cup or a European Championship, and that's asking an awful lot. So, I mean, the amazing thing again, when Princess Anne won in 1971, who was second? George Best. And that again, I think, is one of the sort of glories of Sports Personality of the Year. What other poll would you get Princess Anne topping, certainly what other sporting poll would you get Princess Anne topping George Best in a league table? So I think, yeah, just for that, I mean, rugby again is an even harder sport, where it becomes incredibly difficult for rugby players to win Sports Personality, and only one of them has managed it. And that, of course, was Johnny Wilkinson with that drop goal in the World Cup.
Again, the moment that stood out for the team, yeah. I wanted to, again, I keep saying it, but we will get there, because I want to talk about individual achievements throughout the list. But we need to talk about its cultural significance as well. And it took 10 years for a woman to win it. Anita Lonsborough won it, the swimmer, in 62. Then the sprinter, Dorothy Hyman, won it the following year. And she was the first female athlete to win it. And we just got a little clip. I just want to play it because it kind of takes us back a little bit to the 60s. Here we go.
These legs won a silver and bronze Olympic medal for Britain. They belong to Dorothy Hyman, a miner's daughter from Barnsley. In Mining Review, we've shown you Dorothy in training, and Dorothy winning the 3A's championship against strong foreign competition. Now we show you how she reached the climax of her ambition and went to Rome.
Of its time, of course. But so, Peter, how do we assess that? Because there'll be those... I'm just imagining now, if you ask the person on the Clapham Omnibus what year did the first woman win Sports Personality of the Year, they might say a lot later than that, thinking that gender bias was prevalent for too long. But 10 years, it arguably is too long, but then two come along at once. I mean, how do we view that, do we think?
I mean, in fact, the following year as well, we got Mary Rand, so we had, as we have now, 3 years in a row, we had female winners. And I think, again, it shows you what sports were prevalent on the BBC at the time, swimming and athletics. And we just so happened to have Lonsborough and Hyman and Rand, who were superb athletes in their own sports. But if we look at a sort of wider picture of gender and sports personality, we can see that before 2000, only about 15% or so of the people who came in the top three were women, whereas since 2000 it's double that. So we can see a movement towards a higher profile for women's sport.
And that engineering, if you will, who does that? Is it the BBC who choose the shortlist? How does it work?
So, the shortlist is chosen now by a group of independent experts. They vary who it is. Usually it's ex-sports people as well as sports journalists and sports editors, sports commentators. So the shortlist comes up with from an independent list, and then, of course, the viewing public vote for it. So I think, one of the reasons why I was interested in writing the book was because I just thought, looking at the list of winners, it's quite an interesting insight into public attitudes towards sport and even some societal changes in Britain over the last 70 years. So it's just a sort of different approach to looking at these shifts.
Yeah, well, go on then. For you, what are the most significant moments then in the history of the tournament?
So, I think as far as the shifts go, I think gender is a really interesting one, and that we do see a higher profile. I mean, who would have thought that in 1971, when the FA finally allowed women to play on FA authorised grounds, that half a century later, we're going to have two female footballers in succession becoming Sports Personality of the Year. I mean, that's an incredible shift. So that tells us something about the movement in women's sports. Yeah. I think also we've got class is an interesting one. Some of the sports that we generally think of as working class sports find it very difficult to win Sports Personality of the Year. Also race is another issue that you can see.
Well, ethnicity I want to get into. Class interests me, though, as well. Mm. What are we saying? Posh people can afford to go motor racing, can we? And
I think we are nearly, Tony, honestly. I think we're sort of saying that actually access to sporting facilities and sporting opportunities are limited a little bit by socioeconomic background and some sports just don't get the coverage. Angling is a really interesting one.
Go on, you tell us. I was going to throw in the big Bob Nudd scandal. Go on, you tell us all about it.
So, angling, of course, is one of the most, I think has the most participants of any sport in Britain. I mean, it's just a hugely popular sport. And in, I'm hopeless at remembering the dates, but it's in the 1990s, I think, 1991, and Bob Nudd, who was the world angling freshwater champion, there was a big move amongst the angling community to get Bob Nudd to win Sports Personality of the Year, and he got over 100,000 votes and won easily compared to Liz McColgan, who was the Scottish middle distance runner. But the BBC said, because the Angling Times had a front page which said, "Vote Nudd for Sports Personality," that counted as canvassing. And so Bob was disqualified and Liz McColgan won it instead.
Yeah. So, I'm in danger of being classist here because I'm starting to think, well, what are the working class sports these days? But you can't shy away from darts, Peter. And there is a darts nominee in the shortlist this time. I'm not allowed to be biased or anything, but I'm just as a journalist saying he's broken through this year. He's going to be right at the forefront of the nation's consciousness at the moment, isn't he, Luke Littler?
I think you're absolutely right. No, I mean, definitely has. I think he's nominated in the Young Sports Personality of the Year as well. So I think he's got two nominations. And I think he's got a good chance. The only other dart player that's ever appeared in the top three is Phil Taylor. But darts was a hugely, hugely popular sport, wasn't it? If you think of Jockey Wilson and Eric Bristow, none of them ever appeared on the shortlist. So darts is starting to break through a little bit, but they've yet to have a winner. And I suppose another sport which is people generally think of as a working class sport is rugby league, and they've only had Kevin Sinfield runner up once, and that's the only time they've featured in the top three.
Class. I mean, I'm just waiting for someone as common as me to win it. I don't know how many years we might have to wait another 70 years for that. What about ethnicity then, Peter? Because that's an issue as well, isn't it? What have you discovered?
I think this is a public vote, and I don't think it's necessarily a reflection on the public. I think more it's a reflection on opportunities and access to sport. So it's noticeable, for example, I think 23 footballers have featured in the top three, virtually all white footballers. And that if we look at that as in the demographics of football, that certainly doesn't reflect the ethnic makeup of professional footballers. So I think something is going on there, that few people from minoritized backgrounds do feature in sports personality. As I say, I don't think it comes down to the voting public. I think it's more just access to opportunity. And sometimes the sorts of sports that dominate aren't always the ones that minoritized groups would necessarily be able to access.
Yeah, we must point out Jude Bellingham's on the shortlist this year.
Yes, that's right.
Inevitably, I can remember in the 70s, in my formative years, watching this year after year after year. It was a huge deal, and you got a chance, and you point this out, you got a chance to see sports people away from the track or away from the pitch, and you saw them in bow ties, and the compere would go into the crowd and have a laugh with them. That was really unusual access back in the day.
It was. That's right. I think that's what, I mean, certainly when I was growing up, so, you know, I remember the show particularly from the 70s and 80s. And that was a real feature of the show, was this, as you say, seeing those sporting heroes in a completely different light, not only dressed up and having to make speeches, but also there were sort of, in the 70s and 80s, a series of slightly raffish pranks that they were always having to do. They would wheel on, I don't know, they'd make them do a little golf competition.
Yeah.
I remember Jonathan Edwards, the only long jump he lost when he won Sports Personality in the whole year was the standing long jump against Martin Afire in Sports Personality of the Year. So that was always part of it. It was slightly Peterish.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. I've got this vague memory of Frank Bruno playing Red Rum at table football. Well, that can't have happened. But Red Rum did something, didn't he, one year? As a
Red Rum came on. I think Red Rum featured. Yeah. And he certainly came on, and I'm sure... I think golf always seemed to be a real popular one. There also be little putting competitions. As I say, they had standing long jumps. Graham Hill and Jackie Stewart always used to be on doing some sort of prank with each other.
Yeah, and while we're on the subject of motor racing, well, not necessarily a prank, but it turned into one. This is the moment in 1983 in a short film that was in the on the programme of Murray Walker finally getting to sit in a car on the starting grid on a Formula One track. Let's have a listen.
But the contents are me, Murray Walker, here at Silverstone to achieve a life's ambition. Drive a Formula One Grand Prix car.
You can always rely on Murray.
Des Lynam there at the end. He stalled it on the grid, Peter. Comedy genius.
It was comedy genius. I think Murray Walker generally was a comedy genius, don't you think so, throughout?
Yeah, he was. So, look, you know, everyone will have a favourite moment. I mean, you talk about the 70s. Virginia Wade won it in 77 because she won Wimbledon. Then Cohen Ovitt swapped over in 78 and 79. Their rivalry was unbelievable. But the ice skater, let's focus on the ice skater as well, John Curry, because I can remember him winning it in 1976. Before you tell us how significant that moment was, let's have a listen to John Curry in action.
Look at this final spread eagle. He usually steps right up here into a double axel. Good boy. He did a beautiful job.
Really, John Curry, really Great Britain.
Just a fine performance for John Curry. You know, Chris, it's a pleasure to see somebody put together all of the elements that make skating the great sport that it is into one performance, not only athleticism in the form of triple jumps and wild moves, but beautiful style, elegant moves, musical interpretation and choreography. It's a pleasure to see.
Well, there we are. Not the last, but the first ice skater to win it.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Because, in fact, we had three successive Olympics. We had ice skaters winning it with John Cousins and then Torvald.
Robin
and
Cousins,
Dean.
Sorry, Robin Cousins and Torvald and Dean, was nobody will ever forget that. So yeah, John Curry, what's the significance of that then, do you think, Peter?
Well, I mean, John Curry, I mean, you know, one of the lovely things for me writing the book was there are certain sports I really, really enjoy. I love all sport, really, but ice skating's right on the kind of margins of my sporting knowledge. I've never ice skated, but I can still remember watching John Curry at the time and recognising that he was brilliant at what he did. And just going back to watch him again, you just realise just not only how athletic he was, but also how he changed his sport, because he was the one who changed ice skating from being all about physicality and jumps into being this sort of aesthetic. And he has got just that grace, which other ice skaters of the period didn't really have. And I think, therefore, what was really interesting about John Curry is that he did, I mean, he faced a lot of prejudice as well. There were lots of rumours about his sexuality, and yet he still won Sports Personality at the end of that year.
But by and large, the award will go to somebody who is already very successful by default, really, and probably well off. So what's the reward, do you feel, for those who get it? Public acclaim, really, a popularity contest? Is that what they take away?
I think so. I think that's why, you know, going back to your earlier question, Tony, I think that's why athletes love it so much, because for most sports now, the riches are there, aren't they? They're getting paid enormous amounts of money. But what they don't get is that popular acclaim across the board that they know within their sport they can rank themselves, but what about compared to other sports people? And this is the chance to show that the general public across the board, they see them as the favourite sporting personality. I mean, of course, in the early days, the winners of the sports personality weren't rich at all. In fact, most of them were amateurs, and this was just this sudden brief moment in the limelight that they got. Yeah. But I think nowadays it is just that public acclaim that makes it still such an important award for people.
I'm just going to play one last clip of a previous winner, just because it takes us back to the 50s of arguably more innocent times when people weren't, this guy was world famous, to be fair, but a world famous cricketer, Jim Laker. He famously took 19 wickets at the Old Trafford Test match back in 1956 and was subsequently honoured as Sports Personality of the Year. Let's have a quick listen.
Laker to Maddox. And that's it. The Ashes are ours. Everyone crowds round Laker to congratulate him, victims and all, for he's broken all records by his wonderful achievement. He's the first bowler ever to take all 10 wickets in a test innings. In fact, he's taken 19 in the match. If ever one man saved the Ashes, it's Surrey's Big Jim Laker.
There we go. He couldn't have written a better nomination himself, and he subsequently won there in 1956.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, the unusual thing about Jim Laker winning is that it's not usually bowlers that capture the public's imagination. More often, it's the batsman. Or an all-rounder, but Jim Laker, because of that spectacular number of wickets he took, as you say, in 1956, became the first cricketer to win it.
Your book's great, Peter, because it's far from a list. I mean, there's a list on the opening page of the winners and their years are grouped into sports, but then each chapter, each story tells us you go back in a time machine and experience all the highs and lows again, things you think you remember, but you suddenly remind it, well, history happened differently. You touch on all the socioeconomic factors around it as well. It's a history of this nation through a sporting lens. It's really interesting.
That's really kind of you to say. I mean, that was the intention, honestly. It wasn't just meant to be a sort of gazetteer or a factual list of sports personality, but it was meant to use, it's meant to be, as far as I'm concerned, it's my kind of love letter to sport and sports personality, because it's something which I've grown up with and is just part of my childhood and part of my memory. But also, it's a bit of a trip down memory lane, a bit of nostalgia, and yet it's meant to give us a little bit of a light insight into, as I say, British society, British sporting culture for 70 years.
And if I took time to read out the list, that I suppose is rewarding itself for who wins it this year, because they're up there with so many different sporting legends. If it was a Sgt. Pepper's album cover, there's some pretty famous faces on there, eh?
There are famous faces, and I think maybe again that's one of the attractions why it's so coveted by sports people nowadays, because you do join that tradition and that list, which has got some of our most famous athletes and sportsmen and women ever. So,
On that very point, as we draw to a close, and we're now going to introduce the Sports Personality of the Year ever competition. So you know all these. Look at your face. I've got you on video here. I can see you. You know them very well. All these winners. You've told their stories brilliantly. Who stands out the most? Who, if you were to combine them all together and have a competition, who wins?
Oh gosh, Tony. I mean, who's your favourite child? Why not ask me that question? So, who stands out? Well, actually, we've already talked about him, honestly, and I surprised myself because I love football. Bobby Moore, David Beckham, Paul Gascoigne, athletics. I absolutely love, and Coen Overt. I sort of lived through that era. But in fact, it's John Curry. John Curry, I just find such an incredible athlete. And yet he's also someone who, as I say, changed the nature of his sport. So I think of all of them, and I surprised myself in my own answer, I think it's probably John Curry.
Right. Well, look, it's a great book. It's been fantastic to speak to you. And we'll end on a bit of novelty if we can as well, Peter, if you don't mind, because as a kid, I used to love those bits as much as anything else. So here, we're going back to 1971, the host Frank Boff. So he's summing up the sporting year of 1971 in song.
Golf, ice hockey and a full day's racing, football, volleyball and paper chasing. We'll be trailing, ocean sailing, then trolley fishermen a film on whaling. We're starting with a sporting fixture, played at Wembley was quite a mixture. Oh, what a game, everybody came, everybody you can name. Charlie, George, Terry Venables and Francis Lee. David Broom and Henry Cooper with his friend Ali. Mark was there and Fittipaldi was the referee at the sporting event of the year. Leicester Pickett riding Martin Peters beat Prince Philip in 1,000 metres. Eddie Waring, long past caring, took it up and under and he lost his bearing. Mick McManus with a forearm knockdown caught Mike Shannon while he had one sock down. What a scene when Billie Jean started up at love 15. Georgie Best and Tommy Doherty had come to blows. Harvey Smith fell off his horse and as he burst his nose, he raised one arm and indicated he would like to go at the sporting event of the year. Harry, Freddy, Truman, Boulder, Bumper, Bounce and Disappear, and Moore's Jumper. Stopped by Avis, he said, stay, Miss Sheila, Jordy, will you tell me what your game is? Dorman had to set a Tony Jacklin. Put that putter down, it's unfair tackling. Alan Clark, just for a lark, Martin, can you leave the park? Archie, Gemmell, Anna Ball, and Colin Bell were there. Both Sir Alph and Brian Clough, well, you could tell were there. Ginny Wayne, even Goolagong as well were there. At the sporting event to which everyone went for the sporting event of the year.
Oh, I mean, that's just nuts, isn't it? That was like every episode of Two Ronnies we've ever seen.
There's a challenge for Claire Balding maybe tomorrow night.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. Peter, it's been a pleasure. Good luck with the book.
Thanks very much, Tony.
Cheers, thank you. There we are, that's Peter Donaldson, the author of And the Winner Is, and Sports Personality of the Year takes place. Is it when? This week, I think. All the barriers are up anyway. It's going to be hard for us to get to the car park after the show, I know that.